Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tonight we're going to continue discussing Lord Kapiladeva's instructions to his mother Devahuti, beginning with text number 20. If you'd like to prepare for tomorrow, you can read the text and also Prabhupada's purports for verses 30 through 37 for tomorrow. Okay, starting with verse 20. Prasangam ajaram pasham atmano kavayo viduhu sa eva sadushu krito moksha dwaram apavritam. Every learned man knows very well that attachment for the material is the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul, but that same attachment, when applied to the self-realized devotees, opens the door of liberation. So, in the previous verses, Lord Kapila has been discussing self-realization in very general terms. So general that the impersonalists would also agree with what he's saying. With this verse, he makes a definite departure and shows his true colors, or the real opinion that he wants to present, that real self-realization must be in the line of devotional service, without recognizing that the Supreme is ultimately a person, and thus without acknowledging that personal service to that Supreme is the actual function of the soul, and therefore is the substance of actual self-realization, then whatever attempt one makes cannot be successful in the ultimate sense otherwise. So, the one final point on which the impersonalists and the personalists agree is that this material world is a place of bondage and illusion. Even the Buddhists strongly agree about that. They have their theory of samsara as a place of illusion and of suffering. There are some details we may disagree about their analysis of the nature of the material world. But the basic idea that this world is not the natural place where we belong, that we're kept entangled here against our better knowledge, against our will, this we agree. The impersonalists agree, the Mayavadis agree, the Buddhists agree, the Jains agree, the Christians and the Muslims and the Jews all agree, basically. It's a common religious idea that this world is, in some sense, false. At least it's not where we really belong. That there's a kingdom of God, which is our real place. So therefore, the first idea any religious person should agree with, that prasangam ajaram pasham atmano kavayo viduhu. All learned persons of all religious persuasions, understand, or should understand, that attachment to material things, ajaram pasham. Pasha is the American word is lasso, rope by which you catch a cow. you know, you simply tie a rope and make a circle at the end, and you throw it over the head of the calf or the cow, and the cow is caught. It's a sport in America, in rodeos. You know, they have competitions to see who can catch a wild bull by throwing a lasso. Pasha. Yamaraj has his pasha. It's his symbol. Because his servants come and use that noose to catch the living entities by the neck and pull them out of their gross bodies and drag them to the court of Yamaraj, 93 million miles. Grabbed by the neck by this rope, pasha. That's the word. Attachment itself is metaphorically the noose around our neck, the rope that Maya has grabbed us by and now has us fully under control. She provides attractions that allure us, and then we put our head in the rope and we're caught. She's very economical. She doesn't expend more energy than it takes, more effort than it takes to trap somebody. So, a demigod is attracted by some beautiful apsara, a very sophisticated creation of Maya. But to catch a male pig, she just has to provide a female pig. She doesn't have to expend as much energy. Maya just uses as much of her power as she needs to catch us. She knows what's required to catch each individual. She's very economical, but she manages to catch everyone. There are so many different forms of prasanga, material attachment, but she's got some variety to entrap everybody. Even the celibate sages, the great yogis, she has the means to capture them too. Even the great scholars of the Vedas, everybody, is subject to being entrapped by the illusory energy. Any living entity, any jiva, any finite soul, is under the danger constantly of being entrapped by Maya. Because of his very finite, infinitesimal position, he's very small, and Maya is empowered, and she's very big. And she's especially empowered by the Supreme Lord. She has special power to capture the living entities. She has her avavanatmika shakti and her vikshepatmika shakti. She makes us forget who we are, puts us into illusion. That's vikshepatmika. Throws us from where we really belong into the world of illusion. And then she covers our consciousness so that we become completely satisfied living in this world of illusion, and we don't want to get out. Anyway, we can go on discussing this, but we don't have time. This is the basic position. And it's not only the Vaishnavs who have this understanding of the illusory nature of the material world. But in the second half of the verse, something special is said. That very same attachment that is the cause of our bondage, moksha dwaram apavritam, becomes the means by which the gateway to liberation is opened. When our attachment is applied to the sadhus. Not that we, Prabhupada discusses in the purport, if you've read it, or even if you haven't read it, he discusses that being a conscious living being means to have desire. You cannot become totally rid of desire. There's no way you can do it. So it's no solution to try to become desireless. You can't accomplish that anyway. What we have to do is redirect our desire. We cannot become free from all attachment. It cannot be done, not by a living entity. And you can't stop being a living entity. You can't obliterate yourself either. So the only hope is to redirect, rechannel that attachment, that desire. And Kapiladev recommends attach your a desire to sadhus. Now, what's a sadhu? Common idea nowadays in India, at least in Vrindavan, is those men who dress in saffron, who've left their families, and live in some ashram and beg. Those are sadhus. But that's not the proper, complete understanding of who is a saintly person. Being a saintly person is not just playing a certain role, dressing in a certain fashion, and abandoning your family. That's not what it necessarily means to be a sadhu. And in Prabhupada's translation, he converts the Sanskrit word sadhu into self-realized devotees. Now that's not directly spelled out in this verse, but in the next few verses it will be. You shouldn't criticize Prabhupada for unfairly translating sadhu as devotee. He may be jumping the gun a little bit, but if you read another two or three verses, that's completely substantiated, corroborated, justified by the very words that Kapiladev speaks. Just wait a few verses. He identifies that sadhu means devotee. Prabhupada gives practical arguments in the purport to show that someone who is not a devotee of the Lord cannot be a real sadhu. Yasyasti bhaktir, this is a statement from Srimad Bhagavatam. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvair gunais tatra samasute suraha. If somebody has devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and if that devotion is without material motives, if it is unalloyed, pure, then whoever that person is, no matter how fallen his background, his birth, and his upbringing may be, how lowly his origin may be, he should be understood that he's decorated with all the good qualities of the saintly demigods and sages. Harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna. But somebody who is not a devotee of Lord Hari, where does he have any really good qualities? Whatever semblance, appearance there may be of his great qualities is illusion. He may be rich, but that wealth will be taken from him in a few years when he has to die. He may be powerful, but that power is limited. Also, it's finished with his death. And he may have other so-called good qualities, but they're just superficial and temporary. He doesn't have real good qualities the way the actual sadhus do, the devotees of the Lord. Manorate nasati davato bahi. The proof is that these materialistic non-devotees, they're always pursuing illusion. The manorata, the chariot of the mind, flight of fancy. They have imagined goals of life. That if our political party is successful, perfection will reign on the earth. You know, if this party or that party wins and maintains power. If our nation prevails over the other nations, there will be heaven on earth. Or if my corporation makes a big profit, you know, the whole world will benefit. Whatever. This is manorata. Just fantasy. Chariot of the mind. No reality to it. So persons who are racing along on the chariot of the mind, they're out of touch with reality. Therefore, they have no real good qualities. What they judge to be good, they don't know what is good and bad. And the people who are impressed by such people also don't know what is good and bad. Anyway, the key point here is that we can take attachment, which we can never fully avoid, and that attachment can free us if we become attached to the Vaishnavas. Why? What's so special about the Vaishnavas? That's discussed in the next verses, next three, four verses. So I'll read verse 21. Titikshava karunika Suridak sarva dehinam ajata shatravakshanta saravat sarubhushanaha. So this verse also doesn't yet openly identify the sadhus as Vaishnavs. Wait another verse. But here, what are the attractive and saintly qualities of such people? That is discussed.
Translation.
The symptoms of a sadhu are that he is tolerant, merciful, and friendly to all living entities. He has no enemies. He is peaceful. He abides by the scriptures. And all his characteristics are sublime. Wonderful qualities of sadhus. Titikshava, tolerant. Hare Krishna. Because he's not attached. He neither hates or loves anything material. Therefore, he can tolerate. We have problem tolerating when we're attracted or repelled by things of this world. A person who doesn't have strong material ambitions can easily tolerate. A person who cannot give up his fixed idea about what he considers success, he will always be frustrated and he'll always experience intolerance. So it's the first characteristic, first symptom of someone who is saintly, that he's actually tolerant. Not just that he knows how to put on a show, to paint a smile on his face, and and not show it when he's angry, pretend not to ever get angry. That's just expert diplomacy or the skill of an actor. Many sadhus are just role-playing, they're just actors. But one who is actually tolerant, that we don't know necessarily. Common people cannot tell just from the external behavior of a person. It takes real intelligence to see who is actually tolerant. That doesn't mean that we should go around testing all the sadhus, sticking them with pins and see if they complain. Or sometimes people go around and actually intentionally give trouble to saintly persons to see how tolerant they are. That's not recommended. You will commit aparads by doing that. Karunika, compassionate. The symptom of a Vaishnava is that he actually is concerned about the suffering of others. Prahlad Maharaj told Nrisingadev, Naivo dvije para duratyaya vaitaranyas tadvirya gayana mahamrita mogna chittaha. My Lord, you're offering me benedictions, but I don't need anything. I could ask for protection from the onslaughts of Maya, but I'm not afraid of Maya. Naivo dvije, I'm not in anxiety. I'm not afraid that Maya will entrap me. Because my heart is always submerged in the ocean of nectar, of singing, hearing and singing your glories. So I'm confident that Maya cannot get near me. So I have no anxiety for myself. But shoche tato vimukachetasa indriyarta maya sukaya. What is it? Maya Sukhaya. Oh, Baram Udvahato Vimudan. I am lamenting, not for myself, but for the foolish conditioned souls who, for the sake of illusory pleasure, are carrying burdens like some donkeys, like jackasses. Working hard, struggling for illusory, temporary, petty pleasure. I'm very much in anxiety how to deliver these people. And then he goes on to tell Nrisimhadev, you can offer me liberation, but I refuse it. I refuse to accept liberation unless I can take all these fallen conditioned souls with me. This is compassion. This is the perfect attitude that a Vaishnav should have. But first, he has to come to the stage of Tatikshavaha, Tatikshu. If he's not peaceful and satisfied, how can he feel compassion for others? If a neophyte Vaishnava who is still influenced by the mode of especially ignorance, he has passionate ambitions, they're frustrated, especially when you become a serious devotee of Krishna. If you're serious, you'll frustrate all your material ambitions. And then, if you're immature, you'll become angry and frustrated and be influenced by the mode of ignorance and depressed. So in that condition, in a state of anger, frustration, and depression, you're not going to be able to feel much compassion for anybody else. You're just going to feel sorry for yourself. Even though Krishna is showing you his mercy by giving you a hard time, by not letting you have your foolish material desires. But if you're immature and foolish, you'll be too disturbed in your mind about your own so-called problems to be worried about anybody else's suffering. So we have to go beyond that. We have to go beyond the raw neophyte state and become mature devotees who are satisfied, or at least patiently awaiting Krishna's mercy. Tatenu kampam susamikshamanaha. A mature devotee, a devotee in the intermediate stage, patiently awaits that when Krishna is ready to give it to me, he will give me his full mercy. And in the meanwhile, bunjena evatmakritam vipakam. He goes on tolerating the suffering that he has created for himself by his past activities anyway. Mature understanding is that whatever happens to us, good or bad, in this world, is created as the reaction of our own past activities. There are no accidents. We call, a bad, Durgatana, accident. But it's not accidental. Everything that happens is an actual reaction to what we have done before. And nobody else is to be blamed for what is our suffering but ourselves. Atma kritam vipakam. The mature devotee understands he has to just tolerate the frustration and pain that he may be suffering because he created it for himself. Anyway, it's no one else's fault but himself. Then he goes on, patiently and tolerantly, continuing his devotional service, expecting that Krishna will eventually show his full mercy. We have to come to that stage. Then we can begin to feel compassion for other people, which is the real symptom of a Vaishnava. Tatikshava karunika suridak sarvadehinam. Friends of every living entity. So the envious grihastas, the term the Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati originally used to distinguish from saintly Vaishnava householders, the materialistic householders, he used the term grihamedi, which originally just means someone who performs sacrifices in his home. But the ritualistic performance of sacrifice tend to be selfish. The karmakandis, karmis. So the grihamedis are selfish and envious. They care about taking care of their own family and friends, and everybody else, if they get in the way, is an enemy. But one who is actually a Vaishnava, who is a mature Vaishnava, doesn't distinguish like that. The whole world is his family. He may have wife and children, but he's not partial. He cares for others' wives and children. Not his interest in other people's wives. He cares about everybody. Suridak sarvadehinam. Not that he's trying to do some mundane welfare work. He understands that real benefit for others is created by spreading Krishna consciousness, by preaching Srimad Bhagavatam, by living Srimad Bhagavatam. That's how you benefit. First of all, your own family. Maybe your parents are atheists. Among the Western devotees, this is more common. The parents are not devotees. You want to help them. You're not going to help them by leaving home, leaving the ashram and going back home. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, when the Bengalis are very attached to their families, so sometimes, not rarely, the families would come to reclaim the Gaudiya Math brahmacharis, to try to take them away from the ashram. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would hide the brahmacharis under his bed when the parents came, and then say, "I haven't seen him, I don't know where he is." Yeah. Because he knew that going home to your parents isn't going to help anybody. If you become a strong devotee, that's the way to help your family. That's the way to be a well-wishing friend of everybody. Become a living example of the devotional life and spread the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then you'll be everybody's friend. Not by building hospitals, not by going home to your mother, or anything else material. Of course, you can visit your mother, but don't let anybody, including your mother, tell you not to serve Krishna. Ajatashatrava. Next on the list, they're everybody's friend and ajata, unborn, shatru, whose enemy. A person whose enemy has never been born. That means, it's a poetic way of saying someone who has no enemies. Hare Krishna. Jaya Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Shri Gornita. King Yudhishthira, that was his name, Ajatashatru, his epithet. The man whose enemy was never born. Curious, because he had so many enemies. The big powerful enemies, including, first of all, Duryodhana and his friends. There was the biggest battle ever fought on the surface of the earth because he had those enemies. How could you say whose enemy was never born? Because he never considered anybody his enemy, including Duryodhana. Somebody may have foolishly considered him an enemy, but he never had, from his point of view, any enemies. And then there are saintly devotees like the Goswamis of Vrindavan, Rupa Sanatan, and the others. Dira, dira jana priyo priyakaro. They were dear, they were attractive to sober, pious people and also to ruffians, also to low-class people. Everybody was impressed and had respect for Rupa Sanatan and the other Goswamis. Sanatan Goswami would wander around the different holy places of Vrajadham. And he considered the residents, even though they were simple, uneducated people, he considered them very dear to Krishna, therefore he was very affectionate to them. So when Sanatan Goswami would visit any village, the villagers would rush to him and try to get his association. And he would try to be friendly with them. He would ask them, in Vraja, the interests are not money in the bank or business or, you know, how are your cows doing? You know, are you managing to get your daughters married? These are Vrajbasis, these are the things they're interested in. And Sanatana Goswami would ask about their cows, about their children. How are your crops going? And so they loved him like a father, all the Vrajbasis. They would come to him with their material problems to get his advice, their family problems and everything. And he would patiently hear them and give them his advice. So when Sanatana Goswami, after living for 4 decades in Vrajadham, when he finally passed away in a ripe old age, all the men in the Vrindavan area, in the whole district of Mathura, shaved their head as if their own father had died. So this is the origin of this big holiday celebrated around India, Guru Purnima. But it is also the day that Sanatana Goswami left this world. So in Govardhan and that area, all over Vraja, but everybody comes to Govardhan for parikrama on that day. The non-Vaishnavas go home to their villages to worship their guru. We have Guru Puja not on one day, but on the birthday of the guru. Non-Vaishnavas go home to their village on Guru Purnima, but the devotees, the Vaishnavas and the Vrijbasis come to Govardhan to celebrate. They may not remember it, but they're actually celebrating the passing away of Sanatana Goswami. and it's called Murya Purnima, which originally means the munda, the shaving of the head by the son when the father passes away. So that's how dear such a saintly devotee is to everybody. He's a friend to everyone. He has no enemies. Sadavaha sadubhushanaha. Sadubhushanaha. These are the saintly devotees who are decorated with all divine qualities. Okay. I admit that the word devotee has not been mentioned yet, but it will be. Or we'll have proof that the sadhus we're talking about are not impersonalists, they're the Vaishnavas. We'll read the next verse.
Mayi ananyabhavena bhaktim kuravanti ye dridam matkrite chakta karmanas chakta swajana bandhavaha.
Here's the proof. Kapiladeva goes on to describe these sadhus.
Such a sadhu engages in staunch devotional service to the Lord.
Actually, the verse says, unto me, mayi,
without deviation. For the sake of the Lord, he renounces all other connections, such as family relationships and friendly acquaintances within the world.
Mayi ananyena bhavena, with bhava, love, for me, which is not distracted to any other object. You may have some love for somebody, but you may have several children. You have love for each of them. But when you love only one person, that is ananya bhava. Love that it cannot be distracted to anybody else. Those sadhus, the real essential characteristic that distinguishes them is bhaktim kurvanti medvidam. They're executing devotional service unto me. Very solid, dridha, firm, determined, undeviating devotional service with exclusive love, ananyena bhavena. And the proof of their exclusive love is that when necessary, they're ready to give anything up, including their families. Swajana bandhava, their friends, their connections in this world. If family, even families, family attachment is the strongest attachment. A man can renounce his business and retire, but it takes more strength to retire from one's family and take sannyas. So the Vaishnavas, we also have the tradition of sannyas. There are few religions in the world where there is no tradition of renunciation. Jewish religion. It's considered in the Jewish religion impious to leave your family. There's no Jewish tradition of sannyas. They don't have sannyasis. But many religions do.
No monks.
They have rabbis and saintly persons, but they're all supposed to be married. Christianity has a tradition of celibacy, of leaving family life. Most religions do. And the Vaishnav tradition of sannyas is also there. Panchashurdvam vanam vrajit. When a man has reached the age of 50, he should think about going to the forest. But that's not a hard and fast rule. We have even ancient history of saintly grihastas who remained in household life way beyond the age of 50. It's an individual thing. When the family is an obstacle to your service to Krishna, then give it up if necessary. But false renunciation of family will actually cause trouble. Raghunath Das Goswami was a lifelong renunciant. He's an eternal associate of Krishna in the Madhurya Rasa, intimate devotee of Krishna. He never fell into illusion. He appeared in this world to participate in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and become the youngest of the six Goswamis. Jiva Goswami is the youngest, next to youngest. But he was born into a rich family, and he didn't want, his father wanted him to take over the family business. He got him married to a beautiful wife. And Raghunath Das wanted to get out. He wanted to run away and join Lord Chaitanya. And he tried many times, and his father sent guards to capture him and bring him home. They tied him up physically. They posted guards around to keep him from running away again. And then he finally ran away and reached Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya chastised him. Not because Raghunath Das was not ready for renunciation, but he wanted to test him. He wanted to show the example. And he told Raghunath Das, Markata vairagya nakoro loka dekaya. Don't make a false show in front of the world of renunciation. This is markata vairagya. It's the renunciation practiced by the monkeys. Monkeys, the so-called sadhus have gone to the forest, or Vrindavan, or some secluded forest, in the name of renunciation. Pick it up. But it's just like the monkeys who live in the forest. What are the monkeys are doing monkey business? Stealing, harassing people, and having sex in public, in front of everybody, with whatever female they can find. So the so-called sadhus go to the holy place, go to the forest, leave their family, and then they engage in illicit sex with widows and others. So that's called markata vairagya, the renunciation of the monkeys. They're in the forest, but they're doing monkey business. Don't be like a monkey sannyasi just to make a show in front of everybody what a renunciant you are. Go home to your parents. Satisfy your parents. Be patient. I'll deliver you in due course of time. That was his instruction to Raghunath Das. Don't prematurely, don't artificially make a show of renunciation. So, who should take the renounced order and when? That has to be judged very carefully by spiritual authority. Spiritual master will give advice to the disciple when to remain in family life, when to leave it. And if we're very surrendered to our spiritual master, we'll follow his advice. But when necessary, when appropriate, serious Vaishnavas are ready to give up anything for Krishna's service, for Krishna's satisfaction, to put aside anything that obstructs their satisfying Krishna and carrying out the mission of Krishna. The Pandavas were grihasthas. Yudhishthira and his brothers fought to win control of Bharatavarsha and rule the world. So they were passionately fighting for a kingdom, and they were in the position of grihasthas. But when Krishna left this world, Krishna was about to leave this world. No, Krishna had already left. It was obvious then that it was time for the Pandavas to leave also. So Yudhishthira and his brothers simply put everything aside. They took off all their ornaments and their fancy garments and started walking toward the north. Walking toward the north means you intend to leave your body. You just keep on walking until you drop dead. The north direction is the direction of liberation. So they walked up into the Himalayas as far as they could go, and each of them left their body, the five Pandavas and their wife Draupadi. The meaning is that as long as Krishna wanted them to remain in this world as politicians and family men, they did it for his service. And the very moment that it was obvious Krishna wanted him to do that, to stop doing that, they gave it up immediately. We accept anything that Krishna wants for his service, but as soon as Krishna doesn't want it anymore, we give it up. That is a mature devotional attitude. Okay, so I'll go on to the next verse. Description of the real saints, the Vaishnavas.
Anyway, this verse makes the identification. Mayi ananya bhavena bhaktim kurvanti. These are people who do unalloyed, enthusiastic devotional service for me. That's Vaishnavs. That's what who the sadhus are being talked about here. Text 23. Madashraya katamrishta shrinvanti katayanti cha tapanti vividas tapa naitan madgata chetasaha. So the previous verse described what the Vaishnavas give up. Well, what do they accept? They don't continue engaging in material things. What do they engage in? That's described here. Engaged constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The sadhus do not suffer the material miseries because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. The activities of devotees are primarily the enjoyment of Krishna Katha. Devotees may have to do other things, but what they like to do is simply hear about, chant about, and remember Krishna in his various forms, his avatars, and also chant about, hear about, and remember Krishna's devotees. That's what Vaishnavas are interested in doing. They may have to work to maintain themselves and their families. They may have to perform practical activities in order to help spread Krishna consciousness. But what their life is for spreading Krishna consciousness, not just passionate activity for its own sake or for some material sake. We may do so many things involved with people and material of this world, but we're doing it to spread Krishna consciousness, to encourage others to also become attracted to this real pleasure of life, of being connected with Krishna. And as long as we can't be in the same place with Krishna, seeing and playing and dancing with him face to face, the next best thing is to hear about him, chant about him, and remember him. That gives the same ecstasy, in fact, greater ecstasy. The mystery is, and that's actually hinted at by this verse, the sadhus, what they do is chant, hear, and remember me. Not that they're dancing with me, playing with me. That's also there. But that's what's called sambhoga, enjoying with the Lord in his personal contact. But there's something else, vipralamba bhava, serving the Lord in separation, the ecstasy, the love experienced in separation from the loved one. In the transcendental realm, that is greater. The ecstasy of being separated from Krishna when you love him, what you feel is more ecstatic than when you're with him. That is the mystery taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's being hinted at here by Kapiladev, because he's describing the essential, the most interesting, the things that what the sadhus are most interested in doing is simply hearing and chanting about Krishna, not necessarily seeing him face to face. Because the ecstasy of separation is greater than the ecstasy of actually being with the Lord. Madashraya katha. Whatever topic is madashraya has some connection with me. That's the topic that's an interesting topic of discussion among Vaishnavas. Mrishta, all purifying. Punya Shravana Kirtanaha. You want to gain some pious credit, therefore you give money to a sadhu. Therefore you go to take a bath in a holy place. Or you do some pious work. You build an orphanage or some other pious activity for punya. But where's the most effective source of punya?
punya shravana kirtanaha. Hearing and chanting about the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is where you get the best source, the most effective source of punya, of pious credits. It is all purifying. Mrishta. Shrinvanti katayanti cha. They're hearing and they're chanting, the Vaishnavas. And therefore, they don't suffer, even in the midst of cause for suffering. Everybody gets sick. Everybody is disturbed by somebody else. Everybody has trouble from the mind and trouble from the body. But advanced Vaishnavas don't experience the pain. Just like if a person is playing a sport, trying to win the soccer game, he may be injured and he doesn't even notice it. Or in battle, a soldier may not even realize he's injured because he's absorbed in the battle. When someone is absorbed, his consciousness is absorbed, he doesn't feel the pain that he ordinarily would feel. Like that, the Vaishnavas, being absorbed in the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness, do not feel the pains of material existence. Tapanti vivida tapa naitam naitam. These devotees are not burned by the burning pains of samsara, of material existence. And then it goes on in the next verse. Kapila Dev continues to explain. Taeva sadavak sadvi sarva sambha vivarjitaha sambhas tesh vatate pratya sambha dosha harahite. Going back to the original theme of attachment and how attachment can free you if it's applied to saintly persons. Kapila Dev sums up saying, O my mother, O virtuous lady, these are the qualities of great devotees who are free from all attachment. You must seek attachment to such holy men, for this counteracts the pernicious effects of material attachments. These are the sadhus, as I have described them, the pure Vaishnavas. Sarvasama, they don't have any material attachment. So how do you become detached? Attach yourself to someone who is detached. You pick up by association, you contract, like becoming infected by a contagious disease. You become infected with the contagion, the qualities of whoever you associate with. Associate with a contaminated person, you pick up their contamination. Associate with lusty people, you become lusty. Associate with greedy people, you become greedy. Associate with saintly persons, you become saintly. So become detached by attaching yourself to those who have no attachment. Sambhastesh, therefore, the conclusion is, it's very desirable, recommended, that you associate yourself with Vaishnavas, because they are the ones who will free you from all your material contamination and attachment. He elaborates on that somewhat in the next verse. Satam prasangan mamavirya samvido bhavanti vitkarna rasayana kata tajoshanad ashu abhavarga vartmani shradaratir bhaktiranu kramishyati. We already discussed this verse a few days ago. By the prasanga, just being in the association of devotees, you get great benefit. Now, what does it mean to be associated with devotees? You may walk past a devotee in the train station and not even notice him. You may be standing in the same room. You may live in the same family, but not appreciate the fact that he's a devotee. So it must be something more than just physical presence, physical proximity, being in the same place at the same time. Prasanga must involve some actual reciprocation. And if we reciprocate with Vaishnavas on a purely material basis, we also don't get the benefit. Not the full benefit. We get some benefit. If I just do business with devotees, I sell them something and I take their money. So I benefit. I've seen this saintly person and it makes an impression on me. But all I've done with them is business. And I'm out to make a profit. That's all. That's not prasanga. That's sangha. Sama connection. But not full association. Prasanga. Prasanga must be that you approach the devotees as devotees. How do you approach a devotee? What do you do with them? Invite them to come and have a cup of coffee and watch TV with you? No. Some people will try to do that. But that's not appropriate association with Vaishnavas. You approach the Vaishnavas, tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. The Vaishnavas can enlighten you about the real purpose of your life and free you from your illusions. So approach them respectfully, pranipatena. You may not literally fall down on the ground, dandavat, but you offer, you show that you respect them. That, my dear sir, you understand the purpose of life better than me. I'm not here to argue with you or to just gossip with you. Please enlighten me. You have to show respect to indicate that fact. Pranipatena pariprashna. And then you have to inquire relevantly. This is to initiate spiritual communication. Excuse me, I'm going to tell the same analogy I've told many times before. Just like the protocol of answering a phone call and making a phone call. You pick up the phone and you say hello. If I don't do that, the person won't even know that I've answered the phone. If I just stand there breathing into the phone, they will be in doubt whether the person is either on the other side. I say hello to acknowledge. I'm here. I'm ready to listen. But the person who calls, it's his responsibility to announce what he's calling about. So the next step of the protocol is the person calling has to say, I'm so-and-so and I'm calling on this business. That's protocol. That's the standard way. Otherwise, the communication doesn't work. If I don't say hello when I answer the phone, or if you don't tell me who you are and what you want, then there's no communication can happen. When telephones were invented, they had to devise this protocol. In Vrindavan, people don't follow the rules. They're spontaneous. So they pick up the phone, and the person calling you says, "Kon hai? Who are you?" You know, and then I can't help but get angry. Who am I? You called me. You know. That's not the standard protocol. So similarly, when you approach a sadhu, a Vaishnav, there's a protocol. Three steps, like saying hello and then announcing who you are. Offer respects to show that I'm not here to talk to preach to you. I want to be preached to by you. You know more than me. Please, you enlighten me, not the other way around. By showing respect, bowing down is showing that respect. Pariprashna. And then ask relevant questions. How is a sadhu supposed to know what you want to hear, what you need to hear, unless you tell him, ask him your questions? Otherwise, it's like a man who goes, his wife saying, take care of this flu, you're getting sicker and sicker. And the man doesn't want to go to the doctor, but his wife insists. And he sits in the clinic for 1 hour. Finally, the doctor sees him. And the doctor says, Mr. Sharma, how are you today? I haven't seen you in a while. What's your problem? No problem, I just came to say hello. So the doctor, he's busy. He's got 100 other patients waiting. He says, okay, Mr. Sharma, I'm very busy. I can't really just talk today. So he's wasting his time and the doctor's time. The thing he should have done was tell the doctor what's the problem. Reveal his heart. Otherwise, what can the doctor do? So what can the sadhu do if you don't ask relevant questions? Open up your heart and tell him what's the problem in your life, at least according to your understanding. Otherwise, again, spiritual communication cannot be properly established.
Okay, now we may have many ideas what we think our problem is. We've got so many symptoms. You know, my body is causing me trouble, my wife is causing me trouble, the government is causing me trouble, the bad economy is causing me trouble. We have so many ideas what we think the problem is. But that's just symptoms. The real problem is that we're stubbornly refusing to serve Krishna, and therefore we're not happy. So there may be a million different questions, but there's only one answer. Basically, the sadhu will always give the same answer. A real sadhu. You're supposed to be serving Krishna. Why don't you do some devotional service? So the third step, no matter question you ask, the third step is always the same. Seva. Begin serving Krishna. This is the protocol. Satam prasangam. That's what it means to associate with Vaishnavas. By associating with Vaishnavas, okay, you get pious credits. You can go to heaven because you gave a donation to a sadhu or you did some service for him. You know, you brought him a basket of fruit or you did something. But the real benefit you get is not some material benediction, some punya. The real benefit is that you get to hear Krishna katha. Mama virya sambado. Bhavanti vitkarna rasayana katha. This is all attractive, all satisfying. Nectar that is poured into the ears and goes straight to the heart, bypassing the brain if the brain is not attentive or is opposed to the process. It will go, if it can reach the ears, it will go right to the heart. This medicine, this tonic of Krishna Katha, Tadjoshanat, and by accepting the dosage of this medicine in the association of Vaishnavas, then one begins to make real progress on the path of liberation. Apavargavartmani. And one will gradually progress through the stages on that path of developing confidence and faith in the process and in Krishna and in his devotees. Of becoming attracted to Krishna and to the Vaishnavas. And then ultimately developing love for Krishna. All beginning with the association of Vaishnavas that leads to the opportunity to hear about Krishna. Okay, so I'll read the last verse for tonight. Bhaktya puman jata viraga aindriyad drishta shrutam mad vachananu chintaya chittasya yatto grahane yoga yukto yatishyate vijubir yoga margahi. Thus consciously engaged in devotional service in the association of devotees, a person gains taste for sense gratification, both in this world and the next. By constantly thinking about the activities of the Lord, this process of Krishna consciousness is the easiest process of mystic power. When one is actually situated on that path of devotional service, he is able to control the mind. By devotion, one automatically develops detachment from everything material. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yadahoitukam. By practicing the service of Lord Vasudev, the Supreme Personality, very quickly and without separate endeavor, one develops two things: a sense of renunciation from material things and transcendental knowledge. You don't have to make separate endeavor for either. So this verse mentions the development, spontaneous, automatic development of vairagya, renunciation, just by practicing Krishna consciousness without separate endeavor. Drishta shrutat. You become uninterested in everything you've seen and everything you've heard about. So we have seen what can be accomplished in this world. Maybe we're a poor man, but we're living in the big city. We see the skyscrapers. We see the rich people driving around in cars. We see on television the happy people. So we've seen it, even though we may not possess it. The pleasures of this world, the success of this world. And then there's other things we've heard of. The perfection that can be achieved in the next life. Attainment of heaven, or even liberation. We've heard about it. But when you actually have gotten a taste for serving Krishna, you lose interest in everything you've seen and everything you've heard. Chittasi yato grahane. And you're able to actually conquer the mind. When you've conquered the mind, then you're a successful yogi. Then you are self-controlled. Then you're becoming a sadhu yourself. When the mind becomes your servant rather than the other way around. Riju be a yoga maya. Now there are many ways to try to do this, to try to control the mind. You can fast, you can stand on your head, you can, like the Jains do, they can pluck out all the hairs on your head as ways to try to control the mind. This is Riju. This is the simple way, the most direct way. Just serve Krishna. Then the mind automatically becomes controlled. You don't have to, by force, by hatha. Hatha means force, hatha yoga. This is ahata yoga. Yoga without force. Riju yoga, direct, easy yoga. So here Kapiladeva has described who is a real saint. And not only that, how someone can become such a saint. The easy way, by simply serving Krishna. This is the essence of his instructions to his mother. The rest is just elaboration. The essence of the summary of it is given in this chapter. For the next 2 days we'll be reading the rest of the chapter. So again, anybody who wants to prepare for tomorrow's seminar, you can read Prabhupada's purports, his translation and purports for verses 30. We'll skip over the next two verses that are the questions of Devahuti, and we'll go to verse 30 and read up to verse 37. Okay, so does anybody have any questions or comments? Yes, Mother? Yes.
But the second line of the verse says about the karma and how a sadhu, a Vaishnava, never gets affected. But for a pure devotee of the Lord, apparently, even though we look some of the things which are happening in the life of a pure devotee, you know, it looks like maybe karma. But a karma never has got an influence on a pure devotee.
Yes, but this verse is actually a description of a Majjhima Bhakta. You know, one who is halfway through becoming perfect. You know, a mature devotee. Paramahamsa, there is no vipaka, no karmic reaction. But a Madhyama Bhakta is still experiencing traces of his past activities. And he may be making some mistakes even now and creating a little bit of new karma by slight deviations. But because he's mature, he doesn't give up. He patiently pursues the endeavor of devotional service. So that's why it's discussing like that, because it's talking about an intermediate stage devotee. Okay? Anything else? Okay, thank you. O glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.